Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Nine Figure versus Nine Figure on the JT Fox Podcast Network. Yes, two nine-figure entrepreneurs going toe to toe with their problems, with their successes. I am JT Fox, nine-figure entrepreneur, over 70 companies and brands. That is Derek Fay, the master of many exits, starting in the fitness business and everything in between. Very successful entrepreneur. Derek, welcome back. Our first show was a massive success. And the number one thing people said is, basically, I love talking about your problems, right? So we're going to talk about a wide range of things. For those of you who are watching this on YouTube, you actually see I'm wearing a Red Bull Racing shirt, Max Verstappen, that says like number one there. Cool shirt I got from them. And then this is me at the Red Bull Racing headquarters, M7, which is probably one of the coolest rooms. So Derek, Red Bull is a massive brand, right? F1 and everything they do. And if you take a look at their social media, they don't even advertise like the energy drink. It's everything that, what are your thoughts about the fact that too many people market what it is they do rather than the experiential and the feeling on that as well? Let's start with that marketing.
Okay, what a great question. I mean, I think that's how you actually build a massive brand, not a big brand, but a massive brand. And no one did it better than Nike. I mean, Nike sold a lifestyle. Nike sold achievement. Nike sold being a champion. And it just happens to also be the shoes that you put on that makes you feel that way. So, you know, a great example is, you know, you mentioned that I built some gyms. All gyms are the same inherently. It's four walls, it's equipment. So if you're just selling what everybody else is selling, it's a much harder path to the top versus, you know, people buy with emotions. And so if you're selling what something represents and it's meaningful to them, I think it's been demonstrated time and time again, Nike, Apple, that you end up winning at the game.
So let's talk about your gyms for a second in marketing, right? So I think the average gym makes $50,000 a year, right? I think that's in the United States. Let's say we were to build a gym from scratch, right? We want to build into a nine-figure business. Yep. Tell me about what would you do? Knowing what you know, you've already sold for nine figures. What would you start from scratch? What do you do?
Yeah, so it's not what would I do, it's what did I do, right? And so the first thing-
What would you do now? Because what did you do, would it work again today? Let's clarify that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, listen,
would you do anything differently now? Because what you did when you first started, you may have been the first, now everybody copies you. So today, I think the mistake is people take a look at what, like you could start an app, but if you're competing against Uber, you're not going to win. Right? Had you started when Uber did, then it becomes a race to market cap and market size. So
yeah, I think that's true in technology-based products, but in brick and mortar, what used to work still works. And I think where people go astray is trying to get too fancy. And so a lot of people still do not do what I do. You know, back in the day, we did old school marketing. And so when I went to sell my company, one of the biggest thing everyone looked at was, Are you hiding your marketing budget? Because we were doing, say, seven gyms. We were doing like $70 million, $80 million a year. And our marketing budget was like a couple $100,000. Now, you're a sophisticated business owner. So if you looked at that, you'd say, okay, something's wrong here. It's hidden somewhere. It's baked in somewhere else. I'm going to have to. But the point of the story is, and I used to go to colleges and speak on this. And here's a great example because I'm a visual thinker. If you produce the greatest commercial ever seen, arguably Apple did that during the Super Bowl.
1984.
Yep. So if you saw that, you might have told one or two or three people. But most commercials don't add up to that. You see, you're like, oh, that was pretty funny. Maybe you tell one, maybe you don't. Point in that is that's what I would consider traditional marketing. What we did, and I still do with a lot of my companies, is we give where we earn. So instead of me pouring money into radio and TV, we would go to local schools, like local firehouses. We would donate in the communities where we earned. And so versus you hearing a radio ad, if instead the school hockey program was going to be canceled and Around the Clock Fitness donated $5,000 to save that, not only are you a member for life, you tell almost everybody that you see. But for whatever reason, that still hasn't caught on. And I still do it with massive, massive success.
So your idea is that use the media to talk about a good thing you did rather than.
In fact, we didn't use the media almost at all. We did it inside of the community. Listen,
So hold on. The word spread in the community that you guys had saved the team, and as a result, they wanted to support you.
That's correct.
How many times can you actually do that? So you save a hockey team here, you save a thing there. Like, how much were you spending on saving the world and make it a better place for you and for me and the entire human race? There are gyms around the world. So,
that is not what we did. And so let's not be disingenuous. Sometimes doing good things is also selfish. And in this case, it absolutely was. But it's better than not doing a good thing and being selfish. And so it's not just about saving the hockey team. It's about doing all of the things in the communities that you're serving. And sometimes they were big events. And sometimes they were school drives. Sometimes they were food can drives. Sometimes we picked families for Christmas. We built a charity called Around the Clock Caring, variation of Around the Clock Fitness. We bought single family homes and we placed women with abused women with children. They went into my homes. I mentored them. We gave job training. They did all of these things for free so they could be back on their feet. So we did these really meaningful things that ingrained our company into the community in a way that the community defended us and supported us in a way that I haven't seen other companies garner.
How did they defend you? Did you do something wrong?
No, defend me in the sense that they continued to spend. Well, that's the best.
So you're saying people went to the gym because they said, we heard you're doing good things to the community. So you set yourself up as a neighborhood gym. Would that be a fair assessment?
100%. We were the largest, but we also felt like we were the smallest in the sense that we cared.
Give me an idea. So you guys had Around the Fitness, because I used to live in Fort Myers.
Around the Clock Fitness. Yeah.
Around the Clock Fitness. Didn't you have one near the Loveland Airport in Fort Myers by the little private airport? Where did you have a location in Fort Myers?
No. Our first one was in Cape Coral. Second was in Fort Myers on 6 Mile by the highway.
Yeah. So give me an idea of how many people signed up the gym and how much it was.
Yeah. So our average, let's put some perspective into this. Your average LA Fitness has 3,000 to 4,000 members. Mm-hmm. Ours was between 8,000 and 12,000 members per facility.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep. And we opened when we opened our gyms, we had a line around the door for over 9 days to sign up at our gyms.
So hold on. So what is that? What was it? What was the average price?
$29. $29 a month.
$29 times 8,000. So that's $232,000 a month. And by the way, also of those people, what percentage stayed for the whole year?
So our retention rate was also much higher. But the truth of the retention just means they keep paying. And so of every
They keep paying. Yeah, retention is keep paying, not necessarily show up. That will be my next question.
Two different things. Business is the only business where you can have unlimited members, but limited parking, right?
By the way, of the 202 of the 8,000 members, let's say, how many of those by the end of the year stuck? Like, what was your churn drop off rate on?
Yeah, so our retention rate was almost 42 months.
42 months. Okay, so
which was incredibly high for the fitness industry.
Very high. So what's the average in the fitness industry?
I think it's somewhere this is 2019, probably in the 18 month range. So we're more than double.
18 month range. And was there any upsells and like what was your revenue? So that's $232,000 a month. Of that $230,000, how much more upsells came? Which I mean, personal training, I imagine.
Personal training was equal to membership or exceeded.
Okay.
And we were also, we had full service deli. So you can come in and have a boar's head sandwich. You can have protein shakes. We had merchandise.
Was it a loss leader, the restaurant, or was the restaurant making money?
We grossed per location. We're going back here a couple of years. We grossed about $100,000 to $150,000 per location with about a 50% margin. Mm-hmm. Take away some waste, you figure about 40% margin. We call it swag, you know, t-shirts, hats, all that type of stuff. We went all in on it, had a brand new launch every month with a t-shirt that was themed and hats and this and that. We did about 100,000 per month in swag per location.
Wow.
And we had kids care. Then we had group X. Then we had events. I mean, we really just maximized.
You created an experiential gym in a way, a community where people bring their families and get involved.
I built facilities that were 30 to 70,000 square feet that I could have charged $200 a month, but I called it affordable luxury because most people could have never afforded to benefit a facility like that. But what it did was increased retention and it made people want to spend more money on other things there.
Of the 8,000, how many people were active that showed up at least once a month?
Oh, well, let's do it this way. If there are 10
not members, not January, let's go to June May.
If there are 10 members, I would say three-ish go to the gym probably. Let's go four-ish go to the gym ever in a year. I would say two of the 10 go regularly. If that, I think it's a stretch, which is wild. Now, in January, out of 10, 11 people go, but that's for 30 days.
So take a step back. You said you're involved in the community, but when you opened the one in Fort Myers, you hadn't been involved in the community it was sort of considered Lee County.
That was Lee County.
So basically you just build up momentum that you were there. And you were riding the wave.
Well, in Fort Myers and Cape Coral, really, I mean,
the area. The same, yeah. But the one's by the highway, one's across the bridge. It's a little bit different, right?
Yeah, but we looked at it more as Lee County until we went outside of Lee County. And it was a harder build. We went to Sarasota because they didn't really know what we were about. But it didn't take long for them to find out.
So the Fort Myers one, just as the numbers, what would it profit a year, that one location, let's say?
So the Fort Myers one would probably profit 1.2 to 1.5 million cash in the bank.
No, it's not bad. And then
Cape Coral was always the beast. It was the first one. We profited $3 million year one. It leveled out, but we year over year, we were doing well over $2 million a year at Cape Coral.
Is there anything you would have done different? I know you had a 9-figure exit on it, but would you have done anything different in terms of building a gym, knowing that what you know now?
I mean, look, I'm sure I made some missteps. But considering the fact that I haven't owned the gym now for 5 years and I'm still approached on a regular basis about how much we used to do things was missed, considering it was just a gym, for being just a gym, we made real money that most gyms don't make.
No,
we made an impact that no gyms make. And I built an army of supporters both in the community and with my employees. So yes, I made mistakes. But I think starting the fact that I started at like 23 years old, I think I did it as well as I could have then. Potentially today, I would do some things a little differently, but it would be more strategic and financial than it would be operating.
So give me an idea. You and I, let's say we start a gym. Like, first of all, why haven't you not taken other gyms and turned them around? You have the expertise. You know the industry very well, except then you got into these other businesses to turn around and, distribution and all these big companies. Why not just go after another gym that's hurting and take it over
and turn it around? Here's what I'm, and you know this, but you know enough about me now. I'm very transparent. And the answer is—
You got sick of it?
I already did it.
Oh, so there's no challenge.
I already did it. That's how I'm wired. I need a challenge. I need a goalpost.
Yeah. Okay.
I need uncertainty. All the things that
people— You need the struggle.
All the things that people shy away from is what gets me excited. And if I don't have it— And listen, here's the greatest part about that. That's the only reason I sold in 2019, 3 months before COVID, is because I was bored. So if I wasn't wired that way, I'd have gone through COVID and probably gone bankrupt.
You think so, though? But at least you're in Florida. It would have been a bit of a better chance. But
I'm trying to be nice because the publicly traded company that bought me went bankrupt.
Oh, really? Oh,
you don't know this?
No.
So I sold it in 2009 to Town Sports International, largest fitness chain in the free world, New York Sports Club, Boston Sports Club, Philadelphia Sports Club.
By the way, Democratic place. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's probably why. I mean, obviously those areas, you weren't allowed to go to the gym. And if you did, you had to wear 12 masks. And
it absolutely destroyed them. So they filed bankruptcy and I stepped back in, took over half of the gyms for free, rebranded them and sold them again a year later.
Wow. Look at this story. And so why'd you take it over for free? And then you just basically took a piece or what's—
No. So again, goes back to treating your people well. As soon as my employees found out that they were getting let go, they all reached out to me instantaneously. And so half of the gyms, the landlord said, all right, if you can't pay, we'll wait. Half of them said, screw you, pay us or we're defaulting on you. So the ones that did that, they closed. When I found out, I called the landlords and said, listen, you know me, you know I can operate, you know I have the financial ability to hold this until it can rebound, but I want everything back for free. Turn the lease to me and I want all the equipment. And they agreed. And the funny part was, then they gave me 6 months abatement that they wouldn't give to them because I stepped up to the plate. So I had 6 months to rebrand. Well, I think we were only closed for like 3 months because of COVID. Rebrand, rebuild. And then the second I could get out, because I did not want to be in the fitness business, I sold it immediately.
Did you sell it for as much as you sold it when you?
No, not even close. And I still have three NDAs on the sales. There were the three independent buyers. Well, let's put it this way. It was 100% profit.
Wow. So basically you took it on, and it's like, it's a story of someone who buys a bunch of building and, or the company they take over, something happens. That's and it. Then this founder takes over. By the way, had the company messed up what they were doing, the culture you had built? It was just COVID that really screwed them over, or it was pretty much kept the same?
Well, I think it would have been very difficult to destroy the company that I built in this area. But so COVID was a big part of it, comma. Now that I've gone back there, there is, and look, that's the problem with large organizations, is they're far away. And no matter how good your people are, if you're not involved and you're trying to operate from New York and Florida, things go sideways. And in my opinion, not to talk bad about the company that I built and sold, I would say that I would be doing things differently and it would be thriving. And now competition that would have never come in is now in. And so that only exacerbates the problem for them.
Well, it does come back to marketing, kind of like the first question that I did, is that I think too many people market what it is they do rather than what is it going to do for other people, or they don't market the feeling. But you mentioned Nike. For me, I used to wear Nike. I like two brands, like Apple, obviously, and I like Red Bull, and I like McLaren. I think it's a lot better when I met the people. Like, for example, yep. I met Zach Brown from McLaren. When you meet the people, I think it's easier to have, you know, you watch.
Get more insight.
Yeah, get more insight on it too as well. But for me, Nike is, the minute they start kneeling, I stopped wearing Nikes. Like, I was Nike on everything because I love what it represented. And when they brought in the political aspect of it, which I personally found, you know, disrespectful to the flag, and you know, people have a right to kneel on the flag, except when they get kidnapped by Russia, all of a sudden they want that government to stand up for them, right? And so for me, but it's kind of funny because Nike sales actually went up when they did that, when they started doing the kneeling. And so for me, I just went to Under Armour. And kind of never went back, and haven't worn anything Nike since as well.
I've got a pretty strong opinion on companies. I don't think that a company has any political opinion, any religious opinion. A company exists to serve its consumer, and that's it. And and this still happens with some of the companies that I'm operating. You know, will you support this candidate or do a dinner or do? I may, but a company that I own will never have a political or religious opinion. Now, people disagree with me. I don't really care, but I don't think a company should take a position like that.
Well, the question is that who are the buyers, right? So I remember people were like, oh, Apple should do more. And I'm like, you have a Samsung. Like, you're not even an Apple user. You're like, you have a Samsung. Who is a Samsung? Like, people are like, I like Android. Why do you like Android? Because I could program it. Okay, how did you program it? I haven't programmed it. I don't understand why people don't use an iPhone. It's just so easy to use.
I agree. Somebody handed me an Android the other day. It's like, oh, hey, or take a picture. And I was like, I don't.
What do I do? I know.
What do I do with it?
That's the same way too. But it's also very interesting because if you take a look at, and I've experienced this in one of my companies, right? So I've experienced real companies all over the world. We have 22 of them. And I bought into the company. And when we started off, it was doing very well in Europe. And then we start expanding to the US. And the first one in the US was doing very well. But then we rebranded on a different name. And everyone was like, oh, billion dollar company. And I think the biggest mistake that people make is you start counting your money or your exit before it happens.
Oh.
And I think part of the problem is that we were three partners, right? I was the minority of the three because I didn't start it. And everyone at the top is like, you know, let's come up with ideas and pass it down to the people before. And then the people then pass on to other people. And I like to use the analogy of Navy versus pirate. And I think when you start off a business, you're like a pirate, you're going to hunt for the treasure. You don't really know where you're going. And all you got to know is that you got to fight for that treasure and you constantly got to fight all the elements. And then there's to come to that level, that to take it scale the next level, you need that Navy approach, chain of command. But if you're not developed yet and you have a chain of command, what you're going to create is red tape. And things are going to happen that you don't like. People are start spending money like you don't even know they spent as well. And that's often the beginning of the end. And I think if the founders don't get their hands dirty, a lot of these companies won't make. I mean, you take a look at Uber, Travis Connect, but he wasn't the guy to take it to the Navy. right? The Darnesh was the doest guy to take that over. And then you have, you know, Fred Smith is the only one in FedEx who's been able to do both. But a lot of times the founder, like, I think that's the fall of WeWork of, you know, it was all cool at first. And then you got big and spending money like crazy. And I think ego is the downfall. I think that anybody can have skills, can get the nine figures if you have skills. Interestingly, I did a poll on Instagram and I said, what is the likelihood you think you're going to be a nine figure person? Look at these stats. I don't know if you saw it yesterday, but let me read some of this. 75% of the people think, and by the way, there's like thousands of people who voted, are going to have a nine figure net worth. 8% have a 50% chance, 23% 25% chance, 10% 0% chance. Do you know how hard it is? Like, there are 10,000 nine-figure people on the planet. We're both of them. But on Instagram, there's 25 million, right? And so,
outnumbered only by the billionaires,
right? I think there's this, right? I mean, unrealistic thing that people, that what they see is not necessarily what they get. So, talk about what I just talked about. Your thoughts?
Well, listen, I love the hunger in the positive thought that, yes, I believe that I can, because to be honest, that is one of the core things that got me to where I am. But that has to be paired with an unbelievable desire, work ethic, and ability to make concise risky decisions for a long period of time. It's not just, as Hormozy says, it's not just, you know, yelling affirmations in the mirror and thinking that shit's going to happen. Wow. Like, this stuff is really, really difficult, right?
What do you think about the manifestation, right? You see online full, like, I'm manifesting my energy. And like, I've never seen so many manifestors. And yeah. I've always thought, for me personally, the movie, The Secret, I never liked it. I thought it was bullshit. Because I said, it's not about the law of attraction. It's the law of taking action. And I think they've replaced the word manifestation for law of attraction. Be like, energy. I manifest abundance of greatness. And by the way, I don't know any high net worth people who talks like that. Like, I've never heard a high net worth person use the word I'm manifesting. My coach Hugh Hilton once in a while will drop it, and I get upset at him because I said, that's a bad example. But other than that, it doesn't, here's the thing. If you don't do it, it's not going to happen. Like, and I think at that point, if you have the right mindset, you don't need to be motivated. You just need to do it. You need to be more strategic rather than more vertical rather than horizontal.
Yeah. But I think when you say the word manifestation, it sounds very witchcrafty. Yeah, so, you know, I'll use an athletic, because I was an athlete most of my life. There is something to, as a baseball player, before a game, envisioning you swinging, envisioning you hitting the ball, envisioning you performing and succeeding. But that doesn't necessarily make it happen. What makes it happen is all of the reps, all of the things you've done prior to that. So proper mindset is probably a better terminology.
But there's a difference between envisioning, like picturing of, okay, here's what the swings are like, or I'm a race car driver, this turn, that turn. Right, obviously, you don't know what car is happening, or you don't know what's happening. But I think manifesting is like, I'm attracting abundance. I think the problem is that I don't think they're more like dreaming. I think there's a difference between, all right, I'm going to go into a meeting. Here's what they're going to say. Here's what I'm going to say. Then the word like manifesting. And I think it's just all these manifestors are people about the quantum physics of things. And I don't know, like, there's a woman that I know that's now a coach on that, right? She took a company public on gummy bears. And I knew that company, and she came to my event and it's like, wow, I went public. And I looked at the stock. It started at 6 and not even like on a big exchange. And I knew it was going to fail because it didn't do enough revenue. So people are just jumping to go public and everything happens. They get shorted by the big guys because they don't have the revenue. They don't have the growth. And these $6 stocks end up being like, you know, 8 cents or 12 cents. And so all of a sudden you're a big shot public figure. You know, I'm a public company. And now you don't really talk about this. You're basically manifesting and being a business coach. And I was like, come on, man. Like, you know what I mean?
So are you saying that a public company is supposed to make money? That's weird. I thought most of them didn't.
Yeah, but there's a difference between the penny stocks. You know what I mean? No, which I think agreed. People go public too soon, right?
I think
the different rules and regulation. Now, I'm going to end off with a secret first of all, the first secret is there is no secret to success. There's no formula. That's the first secret. But an advantage that I have is that I practice business. And because the notion of this, right? Players do the reps over and over and over all week long, as many times as possible. So when it's game time, it's automatic, right? No different than Kobe Bryant taking that shot on that spot 1,000 different times. So when he has to make that shot one time, he makes it, it's automatic to him. Yep. And so I do that, let's say 6 days a week. So when it's game day on Sunday, I nail it, right? Yep. So I practiced marketing, right? Which I came up with literally for 6 months every day, marketing headlines, not even in my business. Cause the idea was I'm going to use other businesses. Cause if I can do any business, then I can do my business easily. I practiced selling, trying to negotiate people asking for things. I practiced negotiating. I practiced reading people. I used to sit at cafes and literally watch tables. Mm. And so when game time goes in there, I know exactly what I need to do, right? Because it's automatic to me. And I feel a lot of people, what they do is they don't practice and then they wing it, right? Sure. And they as soon as there's a little adversity, they get hit in the head or something happens, they blah, 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 and then they fail, or they start off really slow and then they end pretty good. But they say this, had I started well in the first place, I would have got the deal or got the opportunity. And so for me, I just look at it as game time. And a lot of people don't have that. So that's my kind of sort of advantage I have. And I think 99% of entrepreneurs don't do that. What's your unfair advantage?
Well, I'm going to piggyback that. And I think I don't necessarily
You're going to manifest?
Hold on. I'm going to light a candle and they manifest with you.
The quantum energy.
I am relentless in the fact that I look at everything like a business. If I'm sitting at a Starbucks like you, I'm not necessarily watching the people, although I love people watching. And I'm thinking about things like, why did they choose this location and not that? Why is this sign? All of the things.
How much revenue do they make a day? I'll ask them, like, what do you
all of it? I'll do the math. I did it the other day. I asked the girl at Starbucks. I said, you know, you do the $2 tip thing. I said, let me ask you a question. How many people give you the tip? And then I started doing the math and I'm like, huh, interesting. But the point is, most people roam through life just like a zombie, not thinking about things, like you said. And then when something happens, you're so unbelievably unprepared. Like you said, it's like, oh man, if I had just, well, who else is going to do it if you're not going to do it? I've been doing this since I'm 6 years old. I'm 45 years old, and I still do it on a regular basis because I know luck is when preparation meets opportunity, like you just said. And so when it comes, I see it. I already have the plan. I execute. And that's why I make money. And the reason people don't are because they're doing the exact opposite. And this, like you said, this is a skill that anybody can learn and anybody can practice. And you'll be lethal in a shorter period of time than you would think.
Well, there's certain things that cost money. Number one, if you're persistent, if you're the most persistent person, you know, and you don't never quit, you never lose until you quit. And I always say the more offers I make, the luckier I get. Right. Mm-hmm. If I put 100 offers, let's say in real estate, right, you want to make $5 million a year. I tell them this math, right? Yep. Basically, we put 5,000 offers and you maybe do 100. Let's say you average 50,000. That's $5 million, right? So you want to make $5 million a year. You have to put 5,000 offers to get 100. That means you have to say no to 4,900 or get rejected. That's if I get with that math, you're like, I'm going to keep going. But people put 10 offers. It doesn't work. Or how many offers did you put? One. Like, you're not going to make it is there. And I think to me, the more offers I make, the more people I talk to, the more money I make. It's just the law of average. It only takes one person, one deal, and one opportunity to change your life.
Agreed. Your business, agreed.
But why the hell do we have this show if we agree? We should disagree on something. But again, I guess.
We're talking about some.
By the way, we had a bunch of topics, but we didn't get to it. We're going to get to it.
We're going to get to number one too.
I saw my background of Red Bull. I'm like, let's talk about marketing because I think it's really marketing. So it just turned into how to build a $100 million gym, sell it, and then sell it again. That's really what the name of the show is kind of be. By the way, if you want more information on me and Derek in the comments, you can see our Instagram or social media. If you want to do business with us, the link is below. Also, too, if you're watching this on Apple or Spotify, if you can like and review it. And if you're on YouTube, make sure you subscribe to the button and you share it. If you want us to do more shows, share it. The first one went completely viral. We want to do more and more and more. Derek, you have the final word. Give us some inspiration.
I would say that I'm going to go a little off topic, but someone asked me about it before we get on the call. They asked me about a deal and he didn't have the money. And I said, listen, everybody thinks that in deals, what they want is money, but really what they want is a result. And so when somebody says, hey, I need $3 million for you to be a part of this company, if they don't have the money, they just frigging quit. And the truth of the matter is, it's often result-based. And so maybe next time we get on, we can talk more about how I look at things, how I structure these deals, how even still today as a nine-figure person, I very rarely use my own money to do really, really big deals, and so can anybody else listening.
Yeah, no, it's a very good point. So there you have it. Nine-figure versus nine-figure, show number two in the bag. Appreciate you all. And we'll see you on number three, where we promise to have topics that will actually go into real business, real information in real time. Things we did yesterday, today, and do tomorrow. Things you can use in your business as well. Thanks for everybody listening. We'll see you on the next show.